What's up, Pitt fans? Welcome back to another Pitt Mailbag here on the Post Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network. He is Chris Carter. I am Noah Hiles. Chris, March is here.
Yes,
we have the big dance just a couple weeks away. We have spring football, which just started this week on Monday. A lot to talk about, a lot of excitement. You know, this really is this month, and everyone talks about the lull that exists between the end of the Super Bowl and really the start of the NHL and NBA postseason. I vehemently disagree. I think that you just got to get through a couple weeks in February. And then once you get honestly past the NBA All-Star Week, you have big time college basketball. I mean, conference tournaments start tomorrow or today when people are watching and listening to this. And it's just all big from here on out. I'm excited. How about you?
I'm really excited. And also, like, February basketball gets crazy. So, like, like that's right around the perfect time for if you're just trying to look for some competitive stuff. Conference plays heating up. Everyone's jockeying for position. Like, that's a great time to cover sports. Also, March is just the best month, you know. That just happens. So happens that there's two beat reporters that cover Pitt that have birthdays in March. But, hey, what do we know?
Yeah. So before we get into the show, we got to talk about the presenting sponsor, which is Mike's Beer Bar. Whether if you're in town for a Steelers, Pirates, or a Pitt game, Mike's Beer Bar is right across the street from PNC Park and has the best selection of beer in town, as well as amazing food options. They have over 20 TVs. You can catch all of your NFL, college football, and basketball, Pirates, Penguins, Riverhounds, and Premier League action right at Mike's. Come on in and try one of their 500 different available beers, 300 of them being local beers, as well as 80 different local craft beers available on tap. You can also get a flight and try out every option you can dream of. And trust me, you won't run out of favorites because I never do, and I'm always there. Try their steak on a stone for an awesome meal where you can choose how hot you'd like your steak cooked with a heated stone right in front of you. As you enjoy a night out in Pittsburgh, come to Mike's Beer Bar and get your sports fix for the best bar in the Steel City. All right, so we've got football and basketball questions for today's mailbag. We'll start off with Sam, who this one is probably the biggest thing on every Pitt fan's mind right now. Assuming Pitt beats Florida State and NC State, in your opinion, how many wins do they need in the ACC tournament to make it? Make it being into the big dance. So before I throw it over to you, Carter, I just want to clean it up, paint the picture a little bit clearer here. So two wins this week would improve Pitt to 21-10 overall and 12-8 in the ACC. That would put it, I don't know if it would be enough. I think they would need a lot of help for them to get that fourth seed and get the double bye. But it's in a similar situation to where it would be last year at this time, where it's going to have 21 wins heading into the ACC tournament, and it's going to be around a 5 or a 6 seed. So, Carter, with all of that being established, what does Pitt's win total need to be if Pitt can win out this week? What does it need to do in the ACC tournament?
It depends on a few things. I think to lock themselves in, they need 23 wins. I think if they get 22, but they also win by decent margins in these last two games, or they need to win at least the next three games, two games to finish the season, one game at least in the conference tournament. If those wins are all by like decent margins, and if they lose in the next round by like a close margin, I can see those factors and you know that playing in their predictive metrics, that people look at that and they see the resume. You know what? They've got 7 true road wins. They've got some really great wins, 2 quad one wins. They finished strong to the season. That's another part that people forget about last season. Pitt started its ACC schedule 1-3 last year, but it ended 1-3 last year. And so that kind of also, I think, painted a
tough
picture.
It started its regular season 1-3. It started the ACC
regular
schedule
season. 3-0. You're right. You're right. I apologize. I'm mixing up things. But they started the regular season 1-3, and then they went into the tournament 1-3. Mm-hmm. And I think those losses, blowout to Duke, a loss to a bad Notre Dame team, and Miami was acceptable because they were a really good team and it went down to the wire. But those things kind of, I think, really hurt their situation last year. Whereas this year, the biggest things I think hurting Pitt happened a while ago. You know, losing at Clemson is not terrible. You know, it was unfortunate because they had a chance to win that one. A blowout loss at Wake Forest isn't good, but it's at Wake Forest. And I think if I'm correct, they still haven't lost at home. You know, but their worst losses came early in the season, Missouri, like that, you know, getting swept by Syracuse. That's those are the things that I think that hold it back. But if you look at their recent resume, they're strong. I think if they get two, if they went out and get two conference tournament wins, I would put them in the tournament for sure. If they get one, they need, if they only get one conference tournament win and win their last two regular season games, I think that they need to win two of those games by like significant margins, like 15, 20 plus.
I think in order to have no fear of missing the tournament, like none at all, 24 is the number.
Okay.
I still think there's a chance this team doesn't get in with 23 wins just because there's too many variables in play here. Because now you're looking at assuming, you know, Pitt gets a 23. So that would be two wins in the ACC tournament and a sweep this week in the final week of the regular season. You're looking at victory margin there. You're seeing, okay, well, how much did they beat, you know, Florida State by? How much did they beat NC State by? How much did they win in their first game in DC? And so like those things will matter. Although if they win two in DC, that's likely going to include a victory over a team that's probably a tournament lock, a Clemson, a Duke, right, a North Carolina. So that would certainly help its cause. I still think, though, just based off of the way things have unfolded and the view of the ACC and everything else, there's too many projections out there that would allow me to believe that 23 wins is safe for this team.
I think 23 it would have wins, to be, yeah.
Yeah, it would have to be 23 wins would be good. I would think their odds are in their favor, but there's still a chance they would miss with 23. I think it's a maybe a slim chance, but depending on what other bubble teams do in their conference tournaments, if a St. John's goes and wins the Big East tournament,
yeah,
or you know, or something like that, something crazy. If Loyola Chicago wins the Atlantic 10 tournament, and that's a two-bid league, things like that, which I don't think are out of the realm of possibility. Maybe not St. John's, but maybe another team like Providence or Villanova stealing a Big East bid. That could screw over a 23-win Pitt team. It could. So I think 24 is as safe as you can possibly be. 23, you should be sitting pretty. But again, you're going to have to really dissect that into victory margin and to what that loss. How bad was their loss in the ACC tournament and who did it come against? Because that could also impact it. I think 24 is a number where you can overlook a team who might have a better net if it only has 21 or 22 wins.
Right.
Whereas if you have 23 wins and their net's significantly better, Pitt's going to probably get jumped by a team in a lesser or in a better conference. So that would be my 24 is the ultimate safety net. 23 is in good shape. So yeah, they, like I said last week, they probably don't need to do this, but they should treat this season like they need to win out. They need to win out from now until March 17th. And I mean, if they do that, they're guaranteed to get in. And right, if they come close to doing that, they should be fine. So on the note of net, this is a very interesting question. Justin asks, if Pitt reaches the magical net 37, is there still a chance they're left out? And that's where I was kind of getting at with the 23 win mark. Yeah, because that's the belief is if you're in the top 37 in net, you're going to make the, you're going to make the dance, right? And I think that Pitt is not far away from reaching that metric. You look at what it, the jump it made this past weekend with a big 25 point win over Boston College. It goes from 49 to 44. It has two more opportunities to win big, actually three, its next three games. It should be heavily favored in. And then hypothetically speaking, it wins in the first round of the ACC tournament. It will play a team where it's going to be an underdog. You win those four games, your net should be inside the top 40. You should be able to go up four spots with four more wins in a row if you take care of business. Now, the problem is, net is such a tricky thing, right? Yeah. Like, they could win by 20 Tuesday night, but if they went on a buzzer beater against NC State, they'll probably lose some ground. That's just the way it works. And also, net being, you know, the calculation that it is, takes a lot into account for where the game is played. And neutral courts are less beneficial for teams in the net compared to road or home. So I would say, yes, they're going to, like, if they're in the top 37 of net, yeah, they're going to get in. But in order for that to happen, they're probably going to have to win 22, 23 games anyway. So yeah, that would be the route regardless. Carter, what says you?
I mean, I think if you're in the 30, yeah, you're in that range. You're getting in. It would take something insanely drastic, like, you know, like in the scenario you mentioned, where like Villanova or Loyola Chicago win their, like, all of them doing that, right. and then like it would take something like that, which would be very unlikely in my opinion. But to the point that you're making, like, this is why it would be important for Pitt to come in and dominate their next few teams. If they do that, I think they put themselves in a position where, you know, if they don't, let's say their next three teams, they dominate, they win 15, 20 plus points, whatever, and then they lose in their second ACC tournament team, they're going to be sweating on Selection Sunday, but I think they'll be sweating with a little bit of confidence. And I think that'll be interesting to see. I look at how things have played out for them. And like, one thing with the predictive metrics about this, and this is, I tweeted about this on Monday, because I tweeted out, you know, I did my story on, over the last 20 years, no ACC team has started 1-5 in conference play and finished making the NCAA tournament. And then I compared it to, there's 12 teams that made at-large bids in either the Big East, the Big 12, the SEC, the Pac-12, that made it there. I might be missing the conference there, but point being, I went over it, and between those 12 teams, a lot of them, you know, if Pitt gets to 20, if Pitt gets to 20, 22 wins, there's only two teams in that mix that had more than that in that stretch. I just think that when I look back and I see how the metrics work, and I was tweeting about the net, I look at things, I'm like, man, Syracuse, like right now, Syracuse swept Pitt this year. They are a half game up on them in the conference and in their overall records. They both have two quad one wins. Pitt has one more quad two win. Syracuse has four more quad three wins. Neither team has lost a quad four game. But the difference is Pitt hasn't been blown out as much as Syracuse. And so that changes everything. And it's wild to me to see. Like, I still don't fully understand the net. I get it. But again, if they handle their business these next three games and win considerably, and I mean 15-20 is where you want to be. 10 points plus, I think, still does the job, but you can't let these games go down to the wire.
Yeah. And it's an interesting scenario here, because I mean, we're talking about like Pitt having these, if they check these boxes, it should be fine. But this is a team that has not been projected to make the tournament all season.
Right.
Not once. Not from the start of the year. Not to, you know, its highest of highs, not to now. We're recording on March 4th, and no bracketologist, or I mean, I saw someone sent me a link where they literally monitor every bracketologist. I think 2 of 60.
Wow.
At the start of this week had Pitt getting in. So that's what, 1 divided by 30. That's not good odds. So, it's hard for me to say that, oh, if Pitt does X, Y, and Z, it'll get in, because the experts are not accounting for any of this. It's still a team that I think has to overcome a lot. And but I think that's why I'm so keen on 24 wins. You can't be ignored if you win 24 games before Selection Sunday. That's why, and Carter, I hear your
logic. And
that
got them to Dayton last year.
And 23 wins and 22 wins, like, that's great. But was that 24 in the regular season? I think 24 was their end of year total.
No, you're right. Yes, that was 22 wins that got them to Dayton last year.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying is, like, there's just no way it gets to 24 and they don't get in. But 23, 22... you would like to think, because again, and I debated on writing this story, this is a better team than last year's.
I agree.
Like, it just is. Like, if you look, like, it's had a better KenPom all year. It's had a better net all year. It's, I think, scores the basketball better. It definitely rebounds better. I think it's equally good. I mean, the front court, like, how can you really argue the difference is there? It's the same players. I guess one guy's been worse than he was last year, but I just think overall it's a better team. It's just the ACC has been better than it was last year, which resulted in a worse league record. So it's just weird where, you know, there's going to be a situation. There could be a situation where this team has 22 wins, similar spot to where it was last year, finishes fourth, fifth, sixth in the ACC standings, and it could be nowhere close to making the tournament in some people's eyes, where last year it was a tournament team. So we'll move on now to some recruiting talk. Donald wants to know, what our gut feelings are on Malik Thomas. Is he genuinely interested? And what do we think the percentage chances of him ending up in Pittsburgh? You can start with this, Chris.
I think there's a few layers to this. One, Malik Thomas with the rating he has, the respect that he has, it's going to cost some serious NIL money. And I think that there's going to be a lot of callers who, you know, from major universities who try to get that young man. Pitt's best chance, if they were to get Malik Thomas, would mean they'd have to give up Bub Carrington. Like, Bub Carrington would have to go to the NBA. Like, because here's the thing. I don't think that, like, there, if Bub comes back, I think Bub is going to require to be kept being paid a little bit more money.
Yeah.
As will Jalen. And they'll want to spend money. The NIL collective will want to spend money to get one big get in the portal to boost this team, as well as, you know, making, seeing what it would take to keep everyone together. If you do all that, I just don't see how you even afford Malik Thomas. If you lose Bub Carrington, maybe there's space for it.
Is that assuming that Bub would be back his junior year? Because Malik Thomas still has another year of high school. So
I guess
in that
setting.
So in that understanding, it would be take some of the. I mean, you'd have to take probably all the money you're giving Bub and then some,
right?
The following year to give to Malik.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I guess it's also presuming a lot that he'd be back, you know, 2 years from now.
Actually, he won't.
But so I guess, like, in that state, like, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of keeping this quarter because Pitt has a good young core. I'm also still adjusting to, you know, I still think back to times when guys stuck together for 3 or 4 years. Sometimes it just doesn't happen anymore. Also depends on, like, what's Jalen Lowe like? Because let's say Bub comes back next year and Bub lights up and goes to the NBA. Jalen also is really good. And then Jalen is the person who you have to pay to keep. Can you afford to pay Jalen and then, you know, keep up what you're doing elsewhere to keep the team together and get Malik? I just think there's a lot there. And who knows? Maybe Pitt's got it. Maybe Pitt's ready for this and this is part of their plan. Jeff Capel, you know, I think he's doing a really good job turning the program around right now. I have a hard time seeing it happen all the other big callers out there.
I was going to say, I'll be more blunt with it. I don't see this happening.
Yeah.
I just don't. And it's not, I do think there's interest. I do. But I mean, I've covered Malik since his freshman year of high school. I know his coach well. I've been following his recruitment since he was getting offers in eighth grade. And from what I've heard, and this isn't from him directly, but from people who are close to his recruitment, it's not going to be cheap. And I'm talking more than what they're going to have to probably pay Carrington and Lowe and Leggett to return. Yeah. Maybe more than all three combined. Mm. So that's the type of price that's attached right now to someone who is a top five player in the country, to someone who is a one and done guy. That's what Thomas is. That's what he has been labeled since his freshman year of high school, and he has not dropped really at all in any of those rankings. He has been one of the top players in the country, and you're in for a bidding war against the highest of, you know, bankrolls. So that's what Pitt can do. And theoretically, yes, could Pitt come up with $1.5, $2 million to get him? Maybe. But what are you going to use after that is the question. And that's like what Carter pointed out. You have retention to worry about. I don't know if Lowe and Carrington will be back for year three together, but I would assume one of them will be.
Yeah.
And now you're also looking at having to retain maybe Brandon Cummings if he has a good freshman year. You're looking to retain other guys. You're looking to add in. You know, there's just, it's a lot. It's a huge investment for a team like Pitt where it would take up a lot of their GDP. And I think Cummings is good, or not? Yeah, I think Cummings is good as well. I think Thomas, who we're actually gross talking about product. Here, yeah, I think Thomas is really good. However, I think that for the size of that investment for Pitt, you're better off probably using those dollars elsewhere. And I think that Malik, I mean, if he's worth what his evaluation is now, which is over $1.5 million. I mean, that's only going to go up. Like, look at what these NIL evaluations do from year to year. Quarterbacks were worth $100K in the start. Now they're worth $1 million or something like that. So it's by the time he's making his decision, that number's probably going to be north of $2 million.
Yeah,
that's and again, he could take a hometown discount. Those evaluations, maybe they're not 100% correct, but I've been told, like, from multiple sources, they understand that with his recruitment is a seven-figure investment.
Yeah.
So how high into the seven figures do we go? I don't know. But as time goes on, that number's only going to increase. Yeah. And yeah, is there interest on his end? Sure. He would love to be a hometown hero. But he also would probably, I mean, the sales pitch of getting more money to go play at Tennessee, Kansas, Duke, you know, all these schools that are in the mix for him, it's not a bad sales pitch either. So I don't see it happening. And honestly, I hope I'm wrong. It would be a cool story to cover. Two Lincoln Park kids running the backcourt together at Pitt. It would be a huge win for Pitt's NIL collectives and everything. And he would be the highest rated Pitt recruit maybe ever. I don't know if I can recall a time where they had a top five guy come in. And I mean, maybe you'd have to go back to like sometime in the Dixon era or something. I think their highest rated recruit
ever is Steven Adams.
No, I mean, that was in the Capel era. Like, you could go in the Dixon era. There were a couple of McDonald's All-Americans, a couple of guys. But, I mean, this is something different. This is a top five guy. So
Steven Adams was Dixon.
Yeah, I meant, yes. I was thinking of Dior. Steven Adams might be the highest rated. I don't know. But, I mean, that's just nowhere near where Thomas is in the hierarchy of recruiting right now. So, and it was easier to get those guys back then when it wasn't. Well, I mean, it was still a bidding war, but it was just kind of under the table. And I don't know. I'm not insinuating that Pitt partook in that bidding
war. Next topic.
But I'm just saying other schools definitely did. But now it's open and out there. So anyway, long story short, neither of us really think it's going to happen.
No.
Michael wants to know, we'll switch over to football. Is this finally the year that Gavin is going to be featured in our offense? You should certainly hope so. I don't know if we can make a judgment on that just one day into spring ball. But just looking, I mean, it has to be. With the effort that the collective went to keep him around, with the narrative surrounded to his name over the last 2 years, being one of the more underutilized talents in the ACC. And with just the talk, like, it was last 2 years, Cignetti, oh, we got to get him the ball more. It's like, then why don't you? And for Cade Bell to come in his introductory press conference and say what he said, oh, he's a matchup nightmare, blah, blah, blah. Like, cool, go do it. So yes, they should certainly hope so. Carter?
I'm right with you. Like, that needs to be a focus in the offense. And it's funny, we asked Pat Narduzzi about the playbook and learning it and how much of the playbook has he learned. He straight up was just like, listen, I ain't learning the playbook. That's Cade Bell's job. I'm with the defense. I'm gonna trust him. We're gonna know like what we want, the things we want to do, but that's up to Coach Cade Bell. So it's gonna be up to Coach Cade Bell to be the person who emphasizes this. But I do think it's gonna be part of Pat Narduzzi sitting on the meetings, like when they're going over their game plans, they're going over their structures of how their playbooks assembled and what, you know, what things they're emphasizing and what things that they're putting together, what concepts they're using. Pat Narduzzi needs to be making. Where's Gavin? Like, where is he in this on this play? Where are you lining him up at? He has to be a priority in this offense. He's too big of a weapon to just leave in the shed and they've done it too. They've done it too much. It's hurt them. It'll hurt them again this year if they do it again. I think they need to stop playing around. Make sure the ball goes to Gavin Bartholomew.
Yeah, I totally agree. We'll wrap it up here with a question from Nate. He wants to know, will either or both Elliot Donald and Nakai Johnson finally break out this season? It's interesting because, I mean, they're both going to be competing for playing time at the same spot, right?
Yep. That was one we actually learned on Monday at Pitt's first spring practice that was open to the media. Nakai Johnson's a defensive tackle now. He was brought in as a four-star defensive end. He was out of West Mifflin. He was developing. We heard a lot of really good things about him in training camp last year. You know, Charlie Partridge said some good things. Deion Hayes was saying good things. Then we didn't see him last year. Like, he kind of was just a reserve guy that came in sparingly, and you didn't really notice it. Shout out to our guy, Stephen Thompson. We were standing out at Pitt spring practice, and he was like, doesn't that kind of look like bigger to you? And I was like, I don't know. And I looked at him, I was like, I mean, kind of, yeah, maybe. And then sure enough, asked Tim Douse, the new defensive line coach. And he said, yeah, Nakai Johnson is going to be playing defensive tackle this season. So they're going to be competing with each other. They need to show polish. They need to show that they've grown as players. And they're going to be doing so without Charlie Partridge, the guy that's been helping them grow for the past for their entire careers. You know, I think that there's a chance you get one of them to break out because I think both of them have good ceilings that they can finally start to tap into this season. Both is, you know, it's usually tough to say that, you know, multiple recruits work out very well when you just give them any smattering of guys that haven't proven themselves yet. But I think either one of them still has the potential to do it this season. If I was to look at anybody, I'd say Elliot Donald because he's been more used to this position, and I think there's something there. But I wouldn't sleep on the potential of Nakai Johnson becoming a player who would be really good for Pitt's defensive line.
I'll give a similar answer to the last question. Pitt should hope so. I mean, these are two guys that are two of their highest profile recruits they've landed out of high school in the last five, 6 years. And to add more context to it, I mean, these are guys coming from their backyard. And Pitt, it's no secret. Pitt has not done well at getting the top talented Whipple guys in the last couple of years. Penn State's coming in, picking out whoever it wants, and Pitt kind of has to deal with that. But if it can show that it can develop guys that are four stars that come in and maybe don't have immediate success, but stick around and develop and become good players, that will be huge for Pitt. And then just looking at this position specifically, I mean, the top four defensive tackles from last year are gone. Three left from graduation, one left through the portal. That is a position that I feel like we did not talk about enough this offseason. We were focused on the new quarterback. We were focused on, you know, all the offensive toys that are coming in to fix the problems here. And, you know, maybe some guys in the secondary or even edge rushers, but defensive tackle, that's a whole new position group. And you're going to see two of these guys being the main ones. I mean, Donald and Johnson, it's their time. It's their time. If this is going to be a program where you need to develop a couple years before you really take off and play well, it's their time to do that. So I would hope for Pitt's sake that these guys really figure it out. Carter, any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
I'm intrigued to see the home environment for these last two home games as Pitt needs to win both of them to keep their tournament hopes alive. And I think by considerable margins, we'll see the turnout there. I'm also going to be intrigued, Noah, to see how many fans make the trip down to D.C. for ACC tournament games. Because last year we saw the Oakland Zoo. You know, they couldn't show up in full force, but they were certainly present in Greensboro, North Carolina. That's not nearly as long of a trip as Washington, D.C. I'd be really interested to see, you know, especially if they finish strong and build up hype to it. What kind of Pitt crowd makes that trek over to D.C. if they're feeling the Panthers?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. We will have you covered for the rest of the regular season. We'll have you covered for the rest of the season, I should say, as you know, we'll have multiple people there at the Pete this week. And then Chris and I will be making the trip down to DC at this time next week. We will be, you know, on the highway, hopefully getting close to our Airbnb where we'll be there all week. For Chris, I'm Noah Hiles signing off saying we'll see you next week here on the Post Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel, Podcast Network.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.